Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome, and thank you for tuning in today. This is an hour dedicated to understanding what enlightenment means and what it just might be to be enlightened. Indeed, an hour devoted to learning something more about ourselves, an hour for those who dare to challenge some of those old ideas about the world we live in and the people we have become. An hour for the adventuresome, willing to evaluate their experience as inseparable from the total knowing of reality. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room is open, and my partner Ravinder awaits you there now. You can log on by going to eldontaylor.com/chat. That's eldontaylor.com/, as Ravinder emphasizes, /chat. Okay, Rav, tell us, what's happening in the chat room today?
The chat room is lively. Everyone's very much looking forward to today's topic. You know, we've often discussed John of God in the chat room before. So, yeah, everyone's looking forward to it. So do come join us. Join in the conversation. That is eldontaylor.com/chat, just in case you forgot.
Okay. Now, every week, I read some of your letters as our way of honoring the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week, our guest was Lindsay Wagner, and she shared with us some of the philosophy and highlights of her Open Your Heart and Quiet Your Mind retreats. Maria wrote, "The program with Lindsay Wagner was amazing and insightful. Thank you for having such an amazing program." Lecree wrote, "Awesome stuff, Eldon, listening to you and Lindsay Wagner." Gwyneth wrote, "Thanks for the great show today. Joined the chat room for the first time." Well, good for you, Gwyneth. Ravinder loves to recruit new people to the chat room. Isn't that right, Rav?
Yes, a little bit, I have to confess.
Sometimes you have, you really have a remarkable show of your own going on inside the chat room.
We do. It's a great chat room. It's a great group of people, and it's very educational.
And you know, I read your chat logs afterwards, and I see that very often the people in the chat room are saying, "I'm going to have to go back and listen to this show in the archives," because they get so involved in conversations about points.
They do. So you get two for one. Doesn't get better than that.
No, I suppose
you get everything.
Not. But if a listener prefers to listen and then join the chat room after the show, they can do that too.
Yes, they can.
And you forget sometimes to tell everybody they can go back to the chat room, they can review the logs, they can see the conversation, because often our guests themselves make appearances in the chat room, answer private questions, etc.
They do.
Right?
And if the guest can't be there themselves, then often they have an assistant that will be in there. So yeah, we had a direct line to Lindsay Wagner last week.
All right.
Not quite as direct as yours, but
okay.
We were happy.
Back to our letters. Jennifer commented, "Lindsay knows so much. I wish I could go to her workshop, but thank God for this show." Debbie wrote, "Your show is always enlightening. I usually end up on a research binge as I read the articles you recommend and search the guests you interview." Richard added, "Theories should lead to tests and validations. This is the rational method Eldon pursues, and that which separates us from weird cultural beliefs versus acquired fact." Barbara wrote, "Thank you, Eldon, for all your wise words. I listen to your show on Hay House Radio all the time." Kathleen wrote, "I have listened to you on Hay House Radio for about 4 weeks now. I love your show. Thank you. Very informative and very interesting. Keep up the awesome work." Well, that's nice, Kathleen. Thank you. Emma wrote, "Heard you today and think you are magnificent. Peace and love from Venezuela." Well, right back at you, Emma, both the magnificent and, of course, the peace and the love. Gail wrote, "Dear Eldon, it is wonderful that you provide these InterTalk free MP3s. They reflect challenges faced by so many. I know I will benefit. I also enjoy your radio show. Thank you so much." Now, I'm going to use your letter, Gail, just by way of segue, to remind everybody out there, if you haven't yet picked up one or more free MP3s from my website, what's stopping you? This is the patented and proven effective technology that has been studied in numerous independent double-blind studies and repeatedly demonstrated effective. These are not samples. This is the real deal. We think of it as a part of our own Pay It Forward program, So get yours today. I mean, I get testimonial letters, several of them every week, about the power of these programs. There's no reason for you not to take advantage of this. All right, while you're there, be sure to sign up for my free newsletter. All right, that's all the time we're going to take for letters today, but I do invite you to opine by sending your email to eldon@eldontaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but as you can see, they do impact our programming, and I thank you for your feedback and continued support. Now to today's show, Spiritism and John of God. What comes to your mind when you hear the word Spiritism? Wiki defines Spiritism this way. Spiritism is a loose corpus of religious faiths having in common the general belief in the survival of a spirit after death. In a stricter sense, it is a religion whose beliefs and practices are based on the works of Alan Kardec and others. Formed in France in the 19th century, it soon spread to other countries, but today the only country where it has a genuinely significant number of adherents is in Brazil. Now, Kardec, a pen name, by the way, was a teacher of mathematics who wrote five books systematizing the foundation of Spiritism. Most of his material was derived during a trance medium state. Excuse me. So how does Spiritism and John of God relate? Actually, you'll learn today of many connections. But take this one for example. It may surprise you. At Saybrook's College of Mind-Body Medicine, doctoral candidates are required to complete a one-hour, 100-hour practicum at the culmination of their PhD coursework. At least one student from there has coordinated a two-week trip to Brazil through Dr. Emma Bragdon, the author of Spiritism and Mental Health. This way, the student was able to learn about Spiritism, visit Spiritist psychiatric hospitals, and John of God. Those that accompany Dr. Bragdon are able to witness how Spiritism is practiced in the mainly medication-free psychiatric hospitals in Brazil, and then sit amongst the hundreds of followers with one of the world's most renowned healers. Our guest today is none other than Dr. Emma Bragdon. Dr. Bragdon is the author of six books and co-producer of two documentary films revealing how spirituality relates to health. She is the director of the Foundation for Energy Therapies, a transpersonal psychologist, a teacher, and spiritual guide. She has led more than 60 groups to visit with John of God since 2001, and is now leading groups of healthcare professionals to Brazil to learn about spiritual practices used to recover mental health in Brazilian psychiatric hospitals and community centers. Emma is deeply involved with education and research focused on spiritual therapies. For 45 years, she has been researching how spiritual development, energy work, and psychological work are all components of mental health recovery, as they treat the causes of mental disturbances. Her first two books were on themes related to the personal crisis individuals may experience when expanding consciousness, called, quote, spiritual emergency, close quote. In the last 20 years, she has focused on helping people awaken and develop spirituality in a gentle manner without crisis. She does this through experiential classes and immersion in the work of John of God's sanctuary. Okay, she just returned from Brazil, and we're happy to have her join us today, so let's get her in here. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Dr. Emma Bragdon.
Thank you, Eldon. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
Well, it is our honor to have you join us, so thank you very much. To begin with, tell us a little bit about yourself and what kindled your interest in Spiritism, John of God, and this whole Brazilian connection.
What kindled my interest was simply going to Brazil. First, I was invited to teach there, and I was teaching a course called the Avatar Course, and a friend asked me to go and see John of God and consult him to find out if my friend could be healed of paraplegia. And in the process of being around John of God, actually in the first 24 hours, I was really catapulted into a knowledge of Spiritism by several mediums saying to me that my destiny was to bring Spiritism to the rest of the world, along with many others, but I was to be writing about it and communicating about it. I didn't know what Spiritism was at that point, which was in 2001, so I went on a fast track of learning and had synchronistically many invitations to visit centers and then hospitals, and so I've had a crash course in Spiritism in the last 11 years.
Wow. Okay, now you heard the setup piece. Just, you know, for clarity, tell us what you mean by a spiritual emergency and how you might train someone to avoid a spiritual crisis.
Well, if someone doesn't have any kind of a framework or map of the journey of spiritual awakening, and they start experiencing phenomena that they associate with being outside the realm of reality or associated with people going crazy, then they can really go through a crisis of tremendous disorientation as they reevaluate their beliefs and also go very deeply into their into deeper realms that have been unconscious for them within their own psyche. And that particular period of time of disorientation and upset can last minutes, hours, days, sometimes months. And in the worst case, people need really to be cared for and be in a safe situation where they don't have their worldly responsibilities for a period of time as they're sorting themselves out. So especially in the last case, that would we could call that a spiritual emergency, meaning a person is waking up spiritually, but in the process they're having a crisis, which means that, for a period of time they're not functioning well in normal society or in work.
Right. Now, I want to get into this in more depth later, but
sure.
Just so that we touch it right now and and we have it for reference. In the Western world, often it's my understanding that these spiritual crises can actually be interpreted as a pathology, and in that regard we treat it as a mental disorder or disease. Have I got that right?
Well, up until quite recently, that was it was absolutely true that if one would walk into, let's say, an emergency room hospital and speak to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and say something along the lines of, I believe that I'm God, or I've been speaking to God directly, or I've had contact with an angel, or even I'm speaking with people who have passed on, or then the psychiatrist or psychologist would immediately be suspicious that that person was having a psychotic break.
Right. And in all probability, they could be admitted. So the word to the wise is go to the publisher, not to the psychologist, if that happens to you. Now, okay, you know, I couldn't pass that. I'm sorry. Now, you know, listen, most of our Hay House listeners are aware of Dr. Wayne Dyer's visit to John of God. So if we may, where I wish to spend most of the hour on Spiritism with you and how and your progress, your understanding, your work in that area, please share with us some of what you've seen with John of God.
Some of what I've seen with John of God. Okay. I've been there, as I said, about 11 years. I've led 60 groups there, and I've had some stunning experiences, many, many of them. I'll tell one that was certainly an experience that made me feel compelled to go deeper into the work, and actually I changed my whole life around so that I could bring people there. And that was in the first visit that I was there, I was sitting close to where John of God does his work, and a woman approached him, and I was meditating with my eyes closed, as you're supposed to, and a woman approached him, and I could barely hear her voice, but shortly after her approach, we were told that we could open our eyes and watch a visible surgery. Well, I was approximately 8 feet away from the woman, and she was standing, and John of God channeling an entity who was previously a surgeon in a prior life, lifted up her blouse and leaned her up against a helper, so she had some stability and support. But basically, she was standing on her own, and he proceeded to do abdominal surgery on her to take out an ovarian tumor. Wow. So I had a very good look at the woman's face because I was so close to her, and she had no sign of pain at all. And as he did the cut, there was very, very little bleeding. And there was no sign that there was any pain that she was having in her gut, as well as any reflection of pain in her face. And he took out some material, placed it in a bowl, stitched her up. But during the whole process, I actually didn't want to look at her abdomen so much. I wanted to see, what is this woman going through? And so I focused more on her face, and I still have to really reach for words, because the expression on her face was on beyond what I'd experienced before. It was something I might project in a Mother Mary figure or a beatific figure. She was actually looking at those of us who were meditating as if giving us blessings. She was completely relaxed, and there was no sign at all, certainly of pain, but also of concern, or even of preoccupation with John of God is now operating on me. She had entered into a state of consciousness that was really very extraordinary from my way of perceiving it. And I had an opportunity to speak to her a week later, and she spoke of her surgery in a very matter-of-fact way, which was basically she had an ovarian tumor that was cancerous. She knew John of God could operate and remove the tumor. She knew there wouldn't be pain. She knew there wouldn't be infection, even though he doesn't use any antiseptic or anesthesia. And she had full confidence. Or we could say she had full faith.
Right.
So it was, there was something, I think she actually transmitted something to me, because she looked into my eyes at one point, and there was such profound peace and blessing coming through her that it was unmistakable. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Certainly piqued my interest and made me feel that there was something just far beyond anything that I'd ever been acquainted with that was going on at the center.
Now, not everyone who sees John of God is healed. Do you have a theory as to why that is, Dr. Bragdon?
Well, there are many ways of speaking about it. John of God himself would say those that are ready to be healed will be healed. He has said this. I'll relate the story of a physician actually who had such terrible complications due to a colon cancer that other doctors in Europe had given up on him, and even after surgery, which had removed a lot of his colon. So he came to John of God, and this is a man who's had, you know, training similar to yours and mine, being in the West and very academic. And he was completely healed of his colon cancer. So he's now practicing again as a physician and leading a normal life. And John of God said about him that he had, if anyone else had as much faith as he did, that they would also be instantly healed. So I think that's a tip-off, that it takes a great deal of faith. And people who come from our culture and who are very, were really trained as intellectuals to believe more in the mind than anything else, can achieve that level of faith, just as people who do not have such intellectual indoctrination and who are more familiar with spiritism, such as the Brazilian woman I talked about.
Right. Well, now, one thing that I think most people are unaware of, and I want to draw out here since you you kind of introduced the idea, is the number of spirits that use John of God's body. And maybe I'm not saying that correctly, but that would be the appearance. I mean, he's reported as saying that spirits are entities of dead people, I'll put that in quotation marks, ranging from physicians to King Solomon, actually have inhabited his body to heal people. And, you know, I think we tend to think of one spirit as being the healer as opposed to many entering and using this vehicle. In your own experience, has there ever been a time that, I mean, it seems like quite a difference between King Solomon and a surgeon, such as what you mentioned. Has there ever been a time that you've seen someone or heard of someone come through John of God, the likes of a King Solomon?
Well, that has definitely happened. And, you know, when he sits and greets people or consults with people, sometimes he really is giving life advice. In other words, he isn't always doing surgery with each person who comes to him. In fact, most people elect to have the psychic surgery, which may, in fact, be an answer to their request for a blessing for their marriage. So the physical surgery is done maybe with one out of 100 people, one out of 75 people, depends on the day. So he is consulting with people and oftentimes needs to draw on wisdom that is out of the ordinary. And at those particular times, of course, it's absolutely appropriate that he draw on theologians and people who have perhaps been known for being worldly wise while they were in a body, but have since progressed and gone on to higher levels of understanding and wisdom. So a King Solomon or Dominacio, the Saint Ignatius who started the Jesuit faith, would be absolutely appropriate to come through him, and they do. In fact, Dominacio is the overarching spirit or guide, mentor, of the sanctuary where John of God does his work.
Okay, you know, it's my understanding that there are many caveats to the process of being with John of God. For example, you're asked to write down something like 3 different requests, and there's no guarantee that any of them will be granted. And if one or more is, you're not told in advance which one it would be. Further, I understand that there is a fasting process that's involved. And if you're on a medication, after the treatment, you're told to leave the medication alone, not to go back to it, kind of a supreme act of faith, I would think, in some instances. So tell us, what should one expect if they were to accompany you to visit with John of God?
All right. Well, you've just referenced several things, and I hope I can answer them all. First of all, I think there's been a bit of a misunderstanding, Eldon. One thing that is mentioned first off when people come to the CASA, either with a guide and also in listening to the public announcements for people who don't have guides, and that is please do not stop taking your medication. If you have been advised by a doctor to be on any kind of medication or treatment protocol, please do not stop during the time that you're here or afterwards. So it is put forth very strongly that what John of God has to offer is complementary to what Western medicine offers, and he is in great respect of Western doctors, and in fact, he goes for his annual checkups, and he follows his doctor's advice.
I'm going to have to ask you to hold that, that's a very important point that you just brought out, and quite different than what I had heard. We'll go into this when we come back, but we have a real hard break we're coming on to.
Okay.
The book, Spiritism and Mental Health, and the website, be sure to visit Emma Bragdon, that's EmmaBragdon.com. Now, if you're not in our chat room, be sure to get there because we have a film of our guest that we're going to show you. Just go to EldonTaylor.com/chat. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up after these words from some of our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Emma Bragdon about Spiritism, John of God, and health care. But before we get back to today's show, I want to remind you to like our Facebook fan page for Provocative Enlightenment Radio. As a fan, you'll always know where we are and what's on next. I would also like to invite you to join me on Facebook while you're there. If you like our show, please do spread the word. We genuinely appreciate your support. I get letters every week from all over the world, and that lets us know just how far the reach is at Hay House Radio. Okay, before the break, we were discussing what to expect when you see John of God. And Dr. Bragdon had just set me straight on something that I had read. Indeed, I'd read and heard that was a requisite after seeing John of God, and that was to abandon your medication. And of course, Dr. Bragdon, you said that's quite not true. I mean, quite the contrary is true. So yes. Please pick it up from there and tell us what we would expect.
Okay. Well, another thing that you had asked me about was that there would be a requirement for fasting. And I don't even know what you're referring to with that. So I'm not quite sure what okay. you were told. But there is no requirement prior to seeing John of God for fasting. He does not require people to fast after seeing him, or even, and I've never heard of anyone being asked to fast as part of their treatment. The one thing that is required is that if people are assigned to, herbs to take, they're asked to not eat pork, not drink alcohol, and not eat hot, spicy food for the period of time they're taking the herbs, which is about 55 days. But that's not fasting. That's okay. quite a simple abstinence. So I think it's important to set people straight, because there are a lot of illusions that people have about what's going on there. You were asking, what can people expect on a trip with me? When I do the trip, the two-week trip that's dedicated to being at John of God sanctuary and a full immersion, then I introduce people to all of the protocols of the CASA, which can be quite complicated. Most people who come with me, in fact, say, I think I'd be lost without a guide. And I notice that a lot of people are, in fact, lost if they don't have a guide, because there's so many details to understand, and there aren't enough people there who are volunteers to answer all the questions people have about how they need to understand the protocols for their personal situation. So a lot of my role is really in assisting each individual in a group to understand the protocol they've been given by John of God and move through it step by step. So I'm only doing about one of those per year at this point that is just devoted to John of God. I am now switching my work so that I'm working with health professionals, which may be alternative health professionals or more conventional MDs and nurses, and introducing them to the Spiritist psychiatric hospitals and also the Spiritist clinics and Spiritist centers in Brazil, so that they can observe and experience, if they want to, some of the protocols for spiritual healing that are used as complementary with the conventional psychiatric work in these hospitals and clinics. Mm-hmm. So I want people to not only be able to experience, but also to discuss what is going on here and what might we bring home to empower and improve our own mental health system, which is having severe problems at this point.
In fact, you know, I want to go there now. In your work, Spiritual Alliances, which is another one of your books, and a very good one, but they're all very good. You basically state that with over 685 deaths per day, this makes conventional medicine or medical treatment the third most common cause of death in the United States. And you're citing data from the World Health Report of 2000, so that our listeners don't get this out of context. But isn't it because of a very large failure in our own healthcare system, the most expensive healthcare system in the world, and yet a system that I think it's ranked isn't it ranked almost 40 among all countries in the world by way of its quality of care? Isn't that, I take from your material anyway, Dr. Bragdon, that is a major motive for you in leading healthcare professionals into this whole spiritism process. Have I got that right?
Yes, you've got that right. I was amazed to hear that we're, I think it's 37th, but it's certainly close to 40 in terms of the quality of care. And especially in our mental health system, we have been, I think, reduced to taking care of issues related to mental health mainly through medication, even though we know that many of our health, mental health care problems originate in trauma, that and people need to be able to process the trauma to move to the other side of it so that they don't have the depression or anxiety anymore that was caused by it. But rather than really looking at what causes the mental health problem, we're addressing the issue as if it was a medical problem, as if it had something to do with how our brain functions. And unfortunately, the public is not, for the most part, up to date with the most recent research, which shows very clearly that most mental illness is not based in dysfunction of the brain, or as it's commonly called, a broken brain system. So it doesn't have to do with supplying the brain with more synthetic chemicals that might create a change in the neurotransmitters. Instead, what we need to do is really look deeper into the causes of mental illness and be able to treat the causes or the roots of mental illness, which they do in spiritism very clearly.
Right. And I want to pursue that, but there are a couple of issues that, this is provocative enlightenment. There are a couple of issues that are really controversial here, and I'd like to just touch on them, if I may, all right?
Sure.
The first one is not everybody has something nice to say about John of God. Indeed, Dr. Andrew Weil, who is quite a, everybody knows as a prominent complementary MD, challenged the magician Randy regarding John of God by suggesting that he contact those that had actually visited John of God before he made any comments. And Randy, of course, posted on his page, if you've been there, tell me all about it. And the letters, and of course, so that everybody understands this, who reads Randy's page is pretty well going to tell you the mindset that comes in. But the letters that came back, one of them I'll just quote here, "My parents and some others are quite definite in stating that the man is worse than a fake. He is actually a deadly, dangerous charlatan who preys upon the terminally ill," close quote. Now, I'm sure you hear this kind of thing, and you're going to hear it more probably as you work with traditional healthcare professionals. So how do you deal with that, Dr. Bragdon?
That's a good and a very important question. over the years that I've been there, I've noticed that you can find anything on the web, the full spectrum, from the noting that he is the most extraordinary healer in the world and likened to Christ, and all the way at the other end of the spectrum, which is that he is just preying on very vulnerable people and taking advantage of people.
Right.
And that's it, period. So
more or less the same thing that Christ would have, that would have been said about him. So enough said there. Go on. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's probably very accurate. I mean, we did, ultimately, we killed him and didn't believe in his goodness, but meaning Christ. So
right.
In terms of John of God, what I mentioned to people who come with me is that this is a man who has an absolute genius for being a healer. In other words, he's healed many people. He works in connection with spirits, and the thousands of spirits that are there at his sanctuary are also assisting the people to heal. And when he's not channeling these beings and not using his capacity as a healer and a channel, he's an ordinary man. So he's not a Christ. He's not an enlightened being. And he himself would be the first one to step forward and say that he's not the one who does the healing. God is the one who does the healing. And so it's his capacity as a channel that takes him into the realm of being a genius, an extraordinary being. Outside of that, he has many of the frailties that most normal people have and has to work through life issues that most people have to work through.
Okay, here's the second one, and this one actually comes out of our chat room, but it's a very valuable question. You know, Richard says, I continue to be haunted by the fact that numerous biblical warnings claim clear danger in talking to spirits of any kind. Why does no one in this field address directly these biblical spiritual warnings? To that, what do you say? Because there are lots of warnings, beware of the necromancers and the, you know, so on and so forth.
Well, let me just say again, one thing that I often tell my groups is it's important when you're here to have meeting John of God, to have an open mind, but don't let your brains fall out. I think that came from the Three Stooges.
So, I like that.
Yeah. So what that means to me is that it's important to hold in perspective that John of God is not an enlightened person, and so is leading a normal life and efforting with it as much as anybody else is. But the other thing is that there have been a lot of difficulties in interpreting the Bible correctly. And, of course, we all know that there have been lots of edits of the Bible, so who knows how much we have the actual document that was written hundreds of years ago.
That's very true. Indeed, you know, one in three words of the current text had to be reinterpreted when we found the Rosetta Stone. But continue.
Yes. So I just wanted to mention that if we place in one category that anyone who communicates to spirits is practicing necromancy and is likely to it's likely to lead them into darkness, then we have to categorically say that when Moses received the Ten Commandments or when Jesus talked to God in his 40 days in the wilderness, that they were also practicing necromancy. And I don't believe
that's true.
Very good point. I believe that we need to open our minds to be able to have a close connection to our own spiritual guidance and also to not let our brains fall out, meaning if something comes through to us when with good intention we're trying to open up to our spiritual guidance, but a negative thought or like a self-judgment comes through at that time, then we probably haven't made the accurate connection to our spiritual guidance, which is always benevolent and compassionate and positive.
You know, yeah. I think every human being that I've ever spoken to has had that inner conversation, if you will, that feeling, that impression, that, you know, their intuition, their instinct, something guided them, something maybe directed them away from a danger or directed them toward a target that yielded great benefit to them.
Yeah.
And in a very real sense, isn't it true that if I were to hear this or sense this, because, you know, most people don't actually hear language per se being spoken to them, we tend to classify them in another area, and we'll get to that in a minute. But isn't it true that if I were to just simply say, you know, I feel like my higher self is talking to me, or then I take the next step, I feel like God is talking to me, that indeed I would be opening myself up to what is called spiritism?
Well,
maybe
you know,
I should change that.
You mentioned
that and say,
earlier. in the definition of Spiritism that it's a religion, and you were quoting our online encyclopedia, but from right. my perception, it's actually a social movement. It's not a religion. And this is after studying it quite intensely for 11 years and talking to many leaders. So I think it's actually dipped into what is universal for all of us. And every human being has a capacity to deepen in their association with their own spiritual guidance and have a direct connection to divinity, however they define that. After all, each of us has a spark of the divine within, and certainly we can go to the Bible, and perhaps an accurate quote from Christ is that these things and more shall you do. So it's through the direct connection that we have with the Godhead that can take us into expanded states of consciousness or greater happiness, greater health, and that is a birthright that everyone has. So it doesn't mean that if you have a connection to your spiritual guidance, that you're a spiritist. But right. if you want to have the fellowship of other people who believe that we all have this kind of capacity, and if you want the support of others who can assist you in moving in that direction, then you might want to attend a spiritist center or spiritist activity just to enhance that potential.
Now, you know, while we're on that subject, one of the quotes that I like that comes out of the Bible that seems to be ignored is a statement by Jesus. It essentially says, "Why would you use my words and not do my deeds?" I think that says something very important to all of us. But if we just to crystallize this, then if I open up to a higher power and I begin to feel that I'm being guided or prompted, even communicating with that higher power, I'm not necessarily, if I understand you correctly, I'm not necessarily practicing spiritism per se, but that is essentially what spiritism is it not?
Well, spiritism moves in the direction of enhancing our connection to the divine, and for us who speak English, we use the word higher self a lot. So, yes, it definitely enhances that connection, but spiritism itself has a much broader framework, and Alan Kardec, you mentioned earlier, who was the one who systematized the principles of spiritism, basically said that the higher beings agree to the fact that life on Earth is about spiritual evolution and that it takes a great deal of discipline to move in that particular direction of spiritual evolution because it has to do with conquering our lower passions and moving into more identification with the potential of our higher chakras, which ultimately are direct connection to God and being able to communicate with spiritual guidance. So Spiritism isn't just about the phenomena of having contact with the dead or having contact with spirits. Spiritism is actually about the process of inner transformation, which is available to every single person, which will take them from the confusion and upset of being identified with things like jealousy, rage, desire to get ahead of everybody else, power trips, etc., moving out of that zone into a zone of being motivated by compassion and love and charity, wanting to help others, and being in more direct connection with spiritual guidance and God, however one perceives that.
That's where I wanted to go. I wanted to make it clear, and again, mm-hmm. correct me if I am distilling this incorrectly, but I wanted to make it clear that spiritism does not necessitate mediumship.
No, it doesn't.
Then differentiate for us spiritism and spiritualism, if you will.
Okay. It's important that both spiritism and spiritualism acknowledge that mediumship exists. In other words, there are some people who are gifted with the ability to be go-betweens, to be able to communicate with spirits who are not in body. But spiritualism was started by people who were really fascinated and even somewhat obsessed by the phenomena that can come from communication with the dead. So that might mean in table tipping, someone hearing knocks or having material things move that are not being moved by a material force but are being moved by an invisible source. And some people have become fascinated by that, and they just want to get to the bottom of what's that about and how can we do more of it. But in Spiritism, it's really oriented towards this greater trajectory, which is inner transformation. And mediumship, or communicating with spirits, is only a small part, not insignificant, but still a small part of the greater process, which is we're all in this life in order to transform and to move towards a closer connection to divinity and to be motivated out of compassion and a desire to be in service to others. So,
okay, now, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say that when I talk to spiritualists today, they say, oh, but wait a minute, that's what we believe too. It's all the same. So I think spiritualism has grown to be much more similar to Spiritism. That's what I wanted to complete with.
In your books, you describe a number of different treatments, protocols that are employed in Brazil. Psychotherapists that are also mediums, the use of remote viewing, automatic writing, and so much more. All of this is designed, I take it, to open up the spiritual side of the human being for purposes of healing. Please expand on that. We've got about a minute and a half more, but elaborate some on that for us so that the audience is clear as to why Spiritism is an important tool, perhaps, in modern healthcare.
Okay. Well, perhaps we can all imagine going into a psychiatric hospital, and what happens in the admission process is usually a psychiatrist and a social worker would check someone out and give them a diagnostic code to describe what the problem was. But if you would imagine in the Brazilian Spiritus psychiatric hospitals, you also add one or more mediums who have the capacity for medical intuition so that they can look into the patient's subtle energy bodies to see if there is congestion that is causing the mental illness. They can look into the past lives of a patient to recognize if there are issues that have emerged or ripened, as they say, at this point in time that actually predate this life or that date actually in traumatic events of this lifetime. So those medical intuitives are trained to do both, as well as be able to look at the chakra system as well as the organic and organs systems of a person to be able to note what are the complications from a body level, as well as a psychological level, as well as soul and spirit. So it adds a full spectrum way of diagnosis, and then the various treatment protocols they have also address and mind, but soul and spirit.
We're going to have to leave it there, Dr. Bragg.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, we're going to have to bring you back. That's all there is to it. As far as the, I am very impressed with your work. I do plan on joining you. I don't know what else I can say. For the listening audience, be certain that you visit Dr. Emma Bragdon's website. That's emmabragdon.com. If you missed it, there are links on my page that will take you directly there. We've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment. Unfortunately, I want to thank all of you for being here. And remember, wherever you are in the world, believing in yourself always matters.